Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
From the Palmetto Swamps to the Piney Woods to the Oak Flats. You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. Come on.
You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast, presented by Scree Gear. And it's the week of Christmas, and I hope that you have lots of Scree gear wrapped up under the tree. And if you don't, there's going to be a huge after Christmas sale from Christmas till the end of the year. Big savings on everything that Scree offers. And so if Santa Claus didn't bring you what you were asking for, shame on him. And you can get big savings at ScreeGear.com, and we always ask you to follow them online. With all the social media, YouTube, you can see lots of the gear in action, find out a lot about it, and shop with confidence, because it's a industry-leading lifetime warranty, VIP sizing and exchange guarantee, customer service, the whole bit, and you will not be disappointed. So shop online at ScreeGear.com. So we're here on site. And this is our first live recording of the year. I say live recording. We're all here together. And with me is Josh and Nate from Scree. Introduce yourselves, Josh and Nate from Scree.
I'm Josh from Scree.
And I'm Nate. Happy to be here.
Levi and Colin are also here. So if do y'all want to say hello?
Negative.
Hola.
Hola. So we're actually we're in Louisiana at Levi's place, and we're not done. Actually, Josh has one hunt left before the weekend is over. We brought these two guys from Utah down here to give them a true, authentic Louisiana hunting experience. And so we're gonna spend a good bit of time on this episode just kind of getting their thoughts and kind of how they feel about what they have experienced. We have done a lot of hanging and hunting, with the exception of one time that Levi tried to kill me by making me climb up in a lock-on that, let's just say it wasn't all that great for trying to film out of. But other than that, we've done a lot of hanging and hunting. Nate was fortunate enough to kill a deer yesterday morning. Mm. And we've had a few good hunts, so I'm going to start off because Josh told me he was going to carry the load on this podcast. So take it away, Josh.
Hey, I'm happy to. It'll be 7.5 minute podcast. No, it's been fun. It's been good. We flew in. Nate and I flew into Louisiana. It would have been Wednesday, right? Yeah. Wednesday morning in a little bit of a storm. From what I hear, it rains a little bit in Louisiana.
Just a little bit.
A little bit more than Utah. We get an annual of 11 inches a year. Well, southern Utah anyway, and I think you guys get 11 inches.
A week.
On Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. When y'all flew last in. Last Wednesday. So, no, it was good. We flew in. you guys, Law came and picked us up. Law and Colin picked us up and took us out here to the camp where there's this cool property, a lot of whitetail. And so for me in particular, this has been my first ever whitetail. Well, technically not true. Second whitetail hunt. We were at Saskatchewan last month, but first time to bow hunt in a tree stand for whitetail. And so it's been a really interesting experience.
Yeah, it's Nate's hunted with me in the past, not down here in Louisiana. We got together in the Midwest for a hunt a couple years ago. And so we had actually hung a few sets there that we were hunting out of. But this is your first hanging hunt experience, right, Nate?
Yeah, that's correct. When we were in the Midwest, like you said, there was already a couple sets that were hung. And so we'd just, every morning or afternoon, we'd go climb up in these stands that were already there. And so being here in Louisiana and, you're climbing up a different tree every hunt. And, this hanging hunt style has been different than any whitetail hunt I've been on, and it's been fun.
So this is, we're hunting with Levi, and Levi is a big mobile hunter. That's really kind of his primary style, and so went in Rome, So we've been doing a lot of mobile setups, kind of hanging a mobile lock on, and Colin and I have been getting in a saddle with these guys and filming the hunt. So it's definitely been I know it's been kind of a culture shock for you guys, being not only the style of hunting, but just off the ground in general. Because you guys, I made the comment to Nate the other day that, what you guys do hunting out west is very physically challenging in many ways. And I guess in, hunting the way we are this week, it's kind of our own, it's our own version of, kind of busting your ass and hunting hard. Because, when you have the pre-hung sets and all that, that makes it a lot more simple. But, it's like, and I'm going to get Levi to comment on this a little bit. I mean, it's the advantage. We're kind of, Levi, would you call this, we're kind of in a pre-rut stage?
Yeah, I mean, I did see that buck kind of courting a doe yesterday morning. So very, I would say the early stages of it from what I've seen. They really, yesterday afternoon, didn't really see much. This morning, we didn't see any chasing per se, but I definitely think some of the does are coming in now. I guess the first and second morning that we hunted, there was definitely some chasing going on. So,
I get what I was kind of getting to with the mobile is we're definitely not hunting any kind of pattern. Hmm. It's kind of a get in the area that the deer are using, and then based on the wind, for that morning or that afternoon or whatever, you're trying to get into, you're really just guessing what kind of travel they're going to be on, because based off what you've seen the hunt before, the day before, and just kind of intuition. And so because of that, just the flexibility of being able to jump over. And like kind of the testament to that is I guess we'll kind of jump right into a little bit of the story of Nate killing a deer. Nate and I, I've been filming Nate, and he killed a deer on the third morning, and it was our third sit in the same spot, but in three different trees. And, let's just say we had had a lock on in there in that first spot, we wouldn't have killed this deer, So we went in and actually saw the deer that he killed was the first deer we saw on the first morning. And, moved two different times based off the movement that we were seeing in this area, and was able to finally get a shot, which was an amazing shot, which it was kudos to Nate on that. So, I mean, what was your I don't know. Kind of give us a little bit of the story from your perspective, Nate, on how you feel about how that hunt went and all.
Yeah, I mean, like Locke said, if we were just in a lock-on in that first spot that we started hunting on Thursday morning, we probably never would have killed that deer. But the flexibility of, you know, being mobile and making adjustments as we saw fit, based on what the deer were doing and stuff. Finally, the third day put us in position to kill that deer. And we hadn't moved 100 yards from where we had sat the first morning and the second morning, but we were still right in that area, just in a little better position. And finally, we were able to get a shot at that buck.
Nate shoots his deer at 47 yards in the hardwoods. And for everybody listening, I mean, you all know 47 yards in the south in the woods is a long shot with a bow. But for you guys, archery hunting out west, 47 yards is
like our 20
close shot.
Yeah, that's a – yeah. Nate made the comment. He was like, I'm when I go mule deer hunting, I'm hoping I get a 47-yard
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, if I can get into 47 yards on a mule deer – I'm a happy camper right there.
So how different was it? I mean, so 47 yards is 47 yards, but how different was it shooting from a tree stand at that distance as opposed to from the ground?
You know, there's kind of some different aspects to it, but I honestly liked it almost better than being on the ground because – you know, I feel like there was somewhat of an advantage being up higher, off the ground, being a little elevated, not as many trees or branches would have been in the way as they would have down on the ground. But, I mean, there is something about shooting being 20 feet up in the air as opposed to both feet on the ground. So that is different for sure. But, you know, I was just so focused on settling my pin where it needed to go. And, you know, as I touched that off, the shot went well. So,
yeah. So we'll have that hunt up on Scree's YouTube channel. I'll get it up there pretty soon, but it was a really cool shot. And, you know, I've probably talked about this, mentioned it on the podcast before, but with filming hunts and bow hunts, I mean, the lighted knock makes a huge difference just in the visual aspect of watching a hunt. But in this case, it was epic. You know, the deer, it really kind of ducked into the shot and he just buried it. I mean, just 12 ring. I mean, it was awesome. it was a really cool hunt in that we got set up and I heard the deer grunt behind us. I heard a deer grunt. I mean, I'm assuming it had to be him. And I waited a minute, and I kind of grunted back. I say grunted back, just grunted. And I could hear I'm in a saddle and looking at the back of the tree, looking basically at the back of Nate's head. And I can hear the deer walking behind us, but I'm trying very, very cautiously to kind of turn where I can see. And because we're in – you know, it's dense hardwoods, but I mean, all the leaves are gone and it's pretty open in as far as that goes. And when I finally got turned around, the deer was standing like 35 or 40 yards behind us, which was downwind. And I just assumed that the hunt, you know, or that deer anyway, that was over, because I fully expected when I finally saw him, he was kind of looking my way. The wind was hitting him in the face. And I'm like, this is not going to happen. Like, yeah. There's no way. And the deer ended up making a big circle around to our right, passed by us on our right side at probably 60 yards, 50 to 60 yards, and started working his way back down into to kind of a slough that we were in. And, you know, ended up giving Nate a 47-yard broadside shot, which he made a great shot. The deer went 100 yards and fell dead right in the middle of the road. We drug it literally 2 feet and picked it up and put it in the back of the golf cart. So that was amazing.
I planned it that way, by the way. Locke.
Yeah. Well, we
I
talked
planned
about
for him
it.
To die right in the road.
We talked about that. We were sitting and we could see this little road through the woods, and I told Nate at one point, I said, wouldn't it be great if he was just laying right in the middle of that road? and he was laying right dead in the middle of the road. So that was really cool. So Josh, you have one hunt left. I know this is your first time to ever hunt out of a tree stand, period, right?
Well, it is, and I'm for me too. Just bow hunting in general, it's new to me. I mean, I've taken my bow out a few times on a spike elk hunt, but I've never even, you know, anticipating killing anything. So yeah, it's new in both aspects, from tree stand and really bow hunting in general.
So just give us we like to do a tier system thing on this podcast. So what we do is, instead of ranking things 1 to 10, you know, like top 10 or whatever, we do like these tiers of something. So we do like snack foods or broadheads or whatever, you know, and like tier 3 is like, it's all right. Tier 2 is like, it's okay, we'll use it. Tier 1's like the best of something. So in that regard, how good has Colin been as your hanging hunt guide?
Oh, Colin. You know what? Here's the thing with Colin.
He hasn't fell, so.
Not yet.
Well, must not be too
got
bad.
Got one hunt left.
Here's the thing with Colin. Okay, Colin, I sit at the base of a tree. Colin gets his sticks out, right? Sticks are called the little steppy things.
Climb steppy things. Steppy things.
Steppy things.
Gets the sticks out, sets everything up, sets up my stand, puts his, gets him all situated, and then he kind of looks down at me and gives me the, all right, you can come up now. And so I do attach my bow to the line, and then I get up the steppy things and get on the stand. And then gratefully Colin reminds me, hey, you gotta put your tether on, so you don't, your harness on, so you don't fall. And I did one morning, I forgot to put my harness on until I got to the top, and so I had to try to put it on at the top. But here's what I like about Colin. I'll be sitting there, you know, I'm like, I have my binos sitting here next to me, and I'm like trying to glass 150 yards out, and or I'll, you know, be sitting there, and Colin will be, oh, here comes a deer right here. Look to your left. And sure enough, there's deer. And so more than even set up, he's my announcement.
He's your bird dog.
Hey, get ready. Here they come. And so more than anything, that's been super helpful.
So y'all had a really good, I guess, was it the second day, Colin?
I mean, the block of woods we've hunted at in the morning, which is really the same block y'all are in, but y'all killed in, but yeah, you know, a couple hundred yards. I mean, that thing is loaded with deer. And the second morning we saw probably 20, 25, deer, three shooters that all just hung up right around that 45 to 55 yard mark. And I mean, he didn't have a clear shot anyway at that distance. So it's not, you know, it is what it is. So, but yeah, a lot of deer movement in the morning over there. And we're hunting a different area in the evening just because, like where we are, when you're on the ground, you can see for 300 yards. And when you get up in the tree, kind of start to canopy yourself, even though the leaves are gone, but you just, if you go in there, and even in a, you know, Levi says we're going to run everything out, and we kind of run everything out when we get down in the morning. So
yeah,
I believe him.
I will tell you one other thing from just a first time in a tree stand. Like, I don't like heights to begin with. Not that I'm like terrified of heights, but standing on a platform, like the first day was actually a set tree stand, which had a bigger platform for me. So I was feeling pretty good, comfortable standing there and move around a little bit. And then that next evening they put me on a mobile tree stand, which is quite a bit smaller. And it was, I mean, for me anyway, I was like, all right, don't look down. And it almost like that sense of like, yeah, I'm going to fall off at some point. I know I am. But each day has gone a little bit better, and now I can even stand up without having to hold on to something.
Josh told me the first thing I did is I got up there and I looked down. I was like, you don't do that.
Actually, I think it was the second morning, like every time he would stand up, he would grab like a limb right here. And I'm like, hey, you're shaking the whole tree. Be careful when you
basically knock it off. Watch, man up, and just stand up.
But so I think this evening maybe he's going to have to try the .5.
Yeah, I was going to say, if, to get the full experience, Levi and I both have the Lone Wolf Custom Gear .5, which if you haven't seen it, it's I mean, it's awesome for what it's built for, but it's very, very small. Like,
you're like standing on a paper plate.
Yeah, your toes are hanging off. And, I mean, I think it would only be fair for you to try it out once.
We'll see.
But I'm curious from your guys' perspective because, you know, as deer hunters, tree stand, whitetail deer hunters, there's this moment where, like, that deer, especially hunting the way we are in thicker, it's not that it's really, really thick, but, you know, we're in the woods. We're not hunting, watching deer come out across open fields or even big food plots. We're actually in the woods, and so there's like that moment where the deer just appears, you know, like it's just, but you look to your right and there's a deer standing there 40 yards, 50 yards away. That's got to be very different for you guys because, you know, you guys are glassing and spotting deer or elk or whatever at a distance and then, you know, making a move to try to get in range or get in a direction where they're going. And so you're kind of constantly in this, I guess my perception, and correct me where I'm wrong, but like it's kind of this constant, you're kind of a constant feedback. You're staying with the animal, right, until you can figure out how to get into a position to take a shot. And with deer hunting, you're sitting there, you know, looking at your phone or whatever, and then like, boom, there's the deer.
In range.
Yeah. So, like, how's that different?
I think it's really what makes this style of hunting so exciting for us because, like you said, we're glassing from a ridgetop, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 yards away at these animals. So they're so far out there that, I mean, and you can glass them closer. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, you're glassing these animals up from a ways away and trying to make a game plan. To get in close enough to get shots, and you know you're trying to watch them bed so you can get the wind right and move in while they're bedded and all sorts of stuff. Where, yeah, I mean that deer yesterday when you saw him,
he was 40 yards.
He was 40 yards, and you said, "Hey, he's right there. Don't move. He's staring at." Like before, I had even time to see the deer. I didn't even see the deer for probably 2 full minutes because he was. I couldn't move to turn and see because he was already kind of aware that we were maybe in the tree. So it's just so fun just being up in the tree and all of a sudden a deer is within bow range of you just like that. And you never saw him coming. You didn't glass him up and move in from 500 yards out. So yeah, I think that's what makes this so fun for us.
Well, we had Colin and I that first morning. We got up in the stand, and he's like, there's a deer. And I'm looking around, like, looking to the left. I guess you guys can't visually see what I'm doing.
Yeah, Josh was visually showing you guys how he was looking around, and it looked awesome. Go ahead, Josh.
I'm looking around, like, Colin, like, what are you doing? There's no deer here. And then he's like, no. He pointed down, and there is a spike right underneath us, and it was like, where did that thing come from? So, yeah, completely different.
Yeah, it had rained the night before. The front pushed through.
Yeah.
So the leaves were wet, and, I mean, when it's wet, they can – you'll never hear them. And I heard something, and he was literally 3 yards right from the base of the tree, and I'm like, don't move. He's right here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's – that. Yeah, that's always been, like – I don't know. I guess in a way – as a deer hunter, even though that's the primary style of tree, you know, tree stand hunting is the primary style of hunting I've done my whole life. That's always been kind of the exciting part. Cause even like I'm a big turkey hunter, but most of the time, not all the time. I mean, sometimes a turkey comes in quiet and stuff like that, but most of the time turkey's been gobbling or whatever. And you kind of have an idea. And when he shows up, you're watching for him. And, you know, there's not, but with tree stand hunting, especially in the woods, there's always that moment where it's just like, boom, you know, it's a deer there, and that's always kind of a cool, I guess, would you call that an emotion or a cool, I don't know, it's just a cool part of deer hunting, how they can just, they just materialize. They're just there, you know.
Well, and then you have to decide fast, like if you want to shoot it or not, because most likely it won't come back too. And so that was a challenge for me, where Nate was talking about when we're glassing from a long ways away, we see every single thing about that deer or elk, is how big it is. We kind of score them in our heads. Okay, is it worth going? But here it's just a quick, all right, you got to make that decision right now, or you probably won't get another chance.
Yeah, you don't have the time to really contemplate it most of the time. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, very from time to time, and I'm sure a lot of, you know, lifelong deer hunters have a story to tell about it, but it's just not often that a deer comes back. You know, you may encounter that deer multiple times from the same place throughout the season, but if a deer gets by you on a hunt, you know, it's just not often that that multiple opportunities present themselves in the same hunt. So that's something that's very different. Levi, you've talked a whole lot, and that's making this kind of interrupting everybody on this podcast.
I'm about to fall asleep over here. I'm at in my perch on the couch.
I did want to ask. We kind of jumped right into talking about y'all's hunt and just kind of getting your reactions, because that's, to me, kind of the interesting part of this episode, is having you guys in camp. And, you know, and even though this isn't Nate's first whitetail hunt in terms of, you know, bow hunting and tree stand hunting, it's his first southern hunt for sure. But I did want you guys to kind of talk about what you do for Scree, because both of you have been, Nate, you've been with the company pretty much since it started, and Josh, you've been there for the majority of the lifespan of the company. So y'all just talk a little bit about what you do and, you know, for Scree.
So yeah, believe it or not, Josh has actually been around technically longer than I have. He just had a different full-time job for a couple years while the company was getting up and going. But he would work, and he can tell you this, he would work, you know, after his full-time job till midnight sometimes. But yeah, I've been with Scree for several years now. I was actually the first employee hired on with the company about 18 months after it started up. So the owner was just running it out of his garage for a time up until then. But I help out with the daily operations and oversee the customer service team and the fulfillment team and, you know, all the stuff that goes on from day to day.
Yeah, speaking of that, so we officially started the business in February of, has it been 7 full years, or is it going into our 7th year?
I want to say it was 2015, which would mean, or was it 2016?
I don't know.
I can never remember.
But I remember we started that February, and that first year, you know, we talk about Black Friday sales. I think it was about 2 in the morning, we were working on our Black Friday sale, and it was like, oh yeah, we probably should be doing something. And then, and this is how that first really 6 months was, is working out of the garage, putting Black Friday sales together at, you know, 2 in the morning on Black Friday. And so it's definitely come a long way since then, but it has been a fun journey. And I do the marketing. I manage the marketing with a lot of great guys who help us with the marketing, but that's my primary job, is marketing and the website and online sales and that type of stuff.
So you were talking about, I started working with Scree in some capacity in November of 2016.
So yeah, we definitely had to have started.
I mean, you were already up. So this is going to sound random, but what year was Trump elected?
16.
So, and here's how I was introduced to Scree. During a hunt, and on that hunt was election night that Trump was elected, and I ended up on a call with Mike that next week, and said that it's not a Trump thing, but it's a benchmark. It's like a mark on a timeline for me, because, you know, it was obviously a big election with Hillary and Trump and all that. Trump gets elected. I'm on a hunt. We actually watched that in the lodge on that hunt, And then I ended up on a call and doing some media stuff later that year and the next year.
Who introduced you to Scree? Do you remember?
Names to not be spoken on this podcast.
I guess I'll get that story after this.
We'll talk about that when the recorder's not. No,
Josh obviously doesn't know.
No, yeah, Josh doesn't know. But no, I mean, I was hunting in camp. No, it's not a big deal. It's really not a big deal. There were a couple of guys that were doing that Michael Wan knew that were doing some supposed to be doing some pro staff kind of work for Scree. They were actually I wasn't there hunting with them. I was hunting on my own, but they were there. And that was a mutual introduction that way. So it was
pro staff.
Yeah, I guess you would call it that. Ambassador, pro staff, whatever. But that was back before Summit, the Summit pattern. I mean, for everybody listening that has, you know, bought Scree or checked it out, like the camo that you see now, back then there was another pattern that is not even distributed anymore.
Called, the OG pattern.
OG Stealth. It was good. I still have all of that, and I still wear it from time to time when I'm not filming because it looks great. But that's a story for another day. That's how I always remember it, because election night was then. So the company was a year before that, 2015, right? So Louisiana. So is this, can we call this a swamp, Levi? Is this a swamp or wetland? What do you call this place? Swamp, wetland?
It's a little bit of all of the above. Swamp, wetland, CRP.
There are cypress trees here.
There are cypress trees, and yes, there's alligators.
So
lots of alligators.
Coming from the desert of Utah, this is a absolute swamp. I mean, we're from the dry desert of southern Utah, and there's so much water here. So,
yeah. So it's been we've had a good hunt. I was actually able to take Nate duck hunting this morning because he killed his deer yesterday. What'd you think about that, Nate?
Yeah, that was a fun experience, man. You know, I've seen YouTube videos or TV shows of, you know, people duck hunting. You know, they got their
flooded timber.
Yeah, flooded timber. They got their duck hole there and stuff. And I never thought I'd experience it, but I got to this morning, and that was pretty fun. I haven't really duck hunted much. A lot of the duck hunting that I have done in southern Utah is more kind of jump shoot.
Yeah.
And I have done a little bit of duck hunting up in northern Utah with some buddies that have airboats, and they took me out on the Great Salt Lake and stuff like that. But this is awesome. You know, we were just in the flooded timber and, you know, had the decoys out there, and there was a couple times we had quite a few ducks that looked like they were really pile shot in good, and that morning, was
do what
y'all really shot good this morning, huh?
Yeah, we that was terrible. We could have done as good.
I heard we
literally probably could. Well, I mean, not literally. That's the wrong way to put it. We could have done almost as good with our bows as we did with those shotguns.
Might have done better.
Let's put it this way:
y'all were lucky Hank was with y'all. Otherwise, y'all wouldn't have killed any.
Yeah, we had a professional guide named Hank, and if it weren't for him, Hank's cool. Hank's Levi's. Was it your cousin?
Yeah,
your cousin's little boy.
Yeah,
he's a cool cat. He was duck hunting with us, and
he got his limit.
He got his limit for sure.
Let's put it this way. I think all my good luck of shooting ran out the day before with my buck.
Must have.
Because I was doing a lot of shooting and a lot of ducks were not falling.
How many boxes of shells did y'all go through?
Two. Which, each? Honestly.
Two each?
No, two total.
One each.
Between the two of us.
Two total. Two boxes and two shells. There were two shells out of the third box. And I'll be honest, when we got done and we were packing up, I was like, man, I feel bad. I shot basically all of Levi's steel shot for the three or four ducks that I killed. But then I went through it. I was like, oh, there's a whole box here that we didn't even get into. I thought we shot way more than that. I'm gonna be honest with you, but I don't duck hunt enough anymore. And it was not. I mean, the duck hunting was fantastic. The shooting was much to be desired. And to tell you how good the duck hunting was, And I know it's not always like that. I mean, so, Nate, it's not always like that. There was a lot of ducks here right now. We've had some cold weather the last couple of days. And, you know, this was a kind of a special, really, morning for the size of some of the groups that we were able to work. But we killed 19 ducks.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, we shot horribly.
Yeah, we'd have a group of six or seven ducks come in, and there'd be 12 to 14 shots between the five of us, and one duck would fall.
One crippled duck.
So, yeah, the shooting was pretty piss poor for sure.
Yeah. Well, all right, so you guys, hopefully you're getting used to some of the stuff that we're doing this season on the podcast, and all of that has been brought on by Colin, because these are his ideas. So Colin says he has something else that we're doing on this podcast, so take it away, Colin.
Do I?
You said you did.
I don't think I did.
Shit.
But here we go. I got
well, now you.
Gotta got
to make something up, Colin.
I got you. I already had
you
something.
You did say that when we sat down. Anyway, go ahead.
I want to talk. I want to hear them tell their thoughts on this food that they're eating this week.
Here, let me take over from here. All right. Okay, so.
Because I don't think that. Well, just go ahead.
Okay, so it all started leaving the airport. And these guys picked us up, and we were cruising down. Locks, but I got to stop and get gas. Okay, so we stop at a gas station. And I think Colin said, grab a snack. So I went in there to get a snack. And they had a full food buffet going on at the gas station. And I'm like, what is this? And so I went over there, and the lady's very helpful, very nice. And I said, can I just get a piece of chicken? And she's like, yeah. And so she get a big old styrofoam tray thing.
To-go box.
To-go box. And so she put a piece of chicken in there. And then she said, what else do you want? You want some of these? Okay. So by the time I got back to the truck, I had a full Thanksgiving meal from the gas station. Macaroni and cheese and beans and mashed potatoes.
Crispy country chicken.
And then she said, I can't do the accent. I'm not even going to do the accent. But do you want a roll or do you want cornbread? And listen, from where we're from, there's a barbecue place that we go to every week, and they have cornbread. I don't care for the cornbread unless you put a lot of honey and butter on it. And I got a roll, and I asked these guys, do you guys really eat that much cornbread? And these guys lit me up. They're like, yeah, we eat cornbread almost at least three or four times a week.
These have dudes have never heard cornbread? Of Jiffy cornbread.
Yeah. Jiffy.
We're feeding them Jiffy cornbread tonight.
So that's where it started from. And then we get here, and by the way, the food's been amazing. But like, Colin brings all these boudin.
Boudin.
Well, first, boudin. I think, before we boudin. Get off the gas station, what did you say that?
What did
that
he call it?
What did you say that lock ate from the gas station?
Yeah, well, yeah. What I mean,
so I
crawfish
had a,
popsicle.
He called it a crawdad popsicle.
Crawdad popsicle.
So I got crawfish meat pies. And
what's a crawfish meat pie?
So Josh called it a crawdad popsicle, which I don't even know how you even thought of that. But yeah, do you know what etouffee is?
No, of course not.
Of course not. No, it's crawfish etouffee stuffed inside of a pastry. Just completely normal.
And, of course, deep fried.
And deep fried.
Actually sounds good.
Completely normal for
it's
us.
It's very good.
Yeah, it was good.
I will tell you, though, we have been up here at Levi's place, and the food has been amazing.
That's why we're hanging so and hunting, good. So we're burning off all these calories that we're eating. Exactly. Otherwise, we'd all be fat by the end of this.
Yeah, we introduced them to some boudin, which they've never had before. And
wild hog. Smoked sausage,
fresh sausage, all that good stuff.
And Levi's. So for the regular listeners of the podcast, I would like to put Levi on Front Street here, because you will all remember that he promised live on the podcast that the next time I came, he was going to cook me all these great recipes that he swore by during one of Colin's tier system. I think it was favorite dinners at the hunting camp tier list thing that we did.
Yeah.
So, we were going to do all that. Well, I've only gotten one of the three.
I'm out of bacon burger.
I didn't ask.
Was that your steak recipe, or were you not able to get everything?
No.
So I didn't even get. I haven't even gotten one of the three.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for your excuses. Just own it. What was the third one?
Backstrap.
Backstrap.
Oh yeah. Well, Nate killed a deer and it had two backstraps on it.
It needs to brine for a day before you ever even cook it. So. We kind of run out of time for that.
We killed it. Maybe next year. Could have been brining.
Yeah. He could have got out of the tree and started the brining process he killed it at 7:20 in the morning. It could have been brining by 10 a.m. yesterday. So, again.
Getting hammered.
No excuses. No excuses from you. But, yeah, so I guess Louisiana is known for the food. And we haven't, to be honest with you, I know we've had
sausage and boudin was really about it.
That we haven't done typically
stews and none of that we haven't
done. We haven't done the full Louisiana cooking experience. I mean, we ate pizza and Mexican as well, which was but that's Louisiana pizza and Mexican's different. we've talked about this on the podcast, but with you guys here, it's kind of a good time. We've had some pretty decent cool weather for
that's
Louisiana.
That's what I was.
Yeah, that's what it was you said we were going to talk about. Okay. But contrary to popular belief, at least Levi doesn't do anything. But Colin and I actually prepare for the podcast a little bit. We talk about what we're going to talk about. Levi just chimes in. That's great. You're the best chimer-inner on the payroll.
Chimer-inner.
33.
So, you guys, we've talked about, talking about scree and layering and all that, how do you layer for different situations? Because we do have pretty diverse weather. This has been pretty cool weather. Not the coldest we get, but
in low 30s.
But yeah, I mean it's been pretty cool,
mid to low.
So, what are your thoughts about the as far as layering and tree stand hunting and comparing that a little against the way you guys would layer up for other kind of hunts that you're more accustomed to?
Well, so usually the style of hunting we do, or at least I do, I'll get to a location and there's a lot of hiking. So to start off, you can't wear a lot of gear. It's very minimal gear to get to where your location is. And I'm talking several miles. It can be. And so you want to be able to pack your gear with you. And then once you get there, allowing your body to cool down or you'll start sweating. So being able to access or, take off, put on very easily and lightweight stuff's in a very important part of how we layer, in the West, where here it's a very similar style, but you do need lightweight clothing gear to get up into the stand or to be able to put a jacket or a pair of pants on quietly and very easily and not big and bulky definitely is a style that you need to have to. But it's been this morning has been the coldest in the last 4 days, and so being able to layer properly is very important as far as the weather part here.
Well, I know Nate's done it a few times, or at least one other trip, but, just coming from out west, do you have – so I guess this is more of a question for Josh, being that he's never sat in a tree stand before. And Nate, you sat in tree stands and hunted with me that week, but it was way colder than this.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, we had days that were single-digit temperatures. Snowing on us. In the Midwest, it was mid-November, and it was cold. I remember just being freezing about the whole time I was there. And it hasn't been – it's been cold here, but it hasn't been on that level.
Yeah.
It's been good, and I've been able to layer properly to battle the cold. And I've been fairly comfortable every single hunt we've been on. I haven't been cold. You know, the layers that I have worn have kept me warm and comfortable.
So I'm curious, Josh, you know, like I said, this being completely your first experience, you know, going back to your everyday, you know, working with the Scree brand. I mean, when you look at this style of hunting, and obviously tree stand hunting, whether it be in the swamps of Louisiana or anywhere else, it is so vastly different from what you guys do out west. I mean, has it given you any different perspectives or ideas about, you know, the products that you're marketing and the development of new products and stuff like that? I mean, how does it change that for
you?
Well,
Colin and I had a conversation 2 days ago. I said, so what new products do you think we need to be creating for this style of hunting? And so a few of that he recommended for me was, you know, that a down vest, just because it just gives you so much more mobility as far as shooting, pulling back a bow, moving around, but it keeps your core nice and warm. Mm-hmm. And it's super easy to, you know, put in a bag and stuff sack. And
yep.
He mentioned, you know, gloves, because a lot of guys like, you know, pulling back their bows and the releases to be able to feel that on their fingers. So fingerless gloves was another.
Yeah, Levi, fingerless gloves.
Oh, my personal favorite too, the man beanies that Locke owns.
Build beanie. It's not a man beanie. It's a build beanie.
Anybody at Scree who's listening, please do not ever put that on your product line.
Scree's going to make a build beanie. That's my mission in life, to push it to conception.
I will admit, I wore that several mornings. It was nice.
Get my head warm. I think it's eventually going to happen, because Locke's been trying to get us to do it for
three or four years
now. I remember he sent us one a long time ago and said, hey, take a look. It'd be awesome if you guys made this. So I think with Locke's persistence, it's probably going to happen.
Well, what other suggestions do you guys have? We've talked about a few, but anything specific?
Levi's like, give me the mic.
here we go. I know it's coming.
What?
The thing you've told me two or three times about.
What, like the quiet outer? Yeah.
That is something that I mentioned to Josh, but go ahead.
It's like I really want kind of like a non-bulky, fleecy type material for a jacket and a pant, with maybe like a windproof laminate on the backside to keep the wind off of you. Something that is extremely quiet is.
Well, you mentioned a kind of a midweight. I don't know if you called it midweight or maybe I just said that, but like a bib that is not like, so Scree has the Guardian bib, which is, you know, what a lot of whitetail hunters probably remember as your heavy.
It's very, very warm.
Yeah, it's not heavy as far as garment weight, but it's a very warm weather.
Cold weather.
You know, thing that you would wear in the colder late season whitetail hunt. Not something that you're looking to pack in. It's not
for a mobile hunter.
No, it's not a mobile hunter type thing. You know, a bib that's midweight, which would provide some warmth, cooler temperatures, but not like your grandpa's old.
Something between the Kodiak pants and the Guardian bibs.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk it through in like terms that I think a lot of whitetail hunters would like. I know for me, as a kid growing up, when it got to like the holidays and, you know, those colder as we get, like, I know my grandpa and all his buddies, they all had these big heavy coveralls and bibs, and when those things came out, you knew it was like cold hunting. You know, it was like, of course, the weather was, you know, get into my climate change speech here, but like the weather was colder when I was a kid than it is now. I believe that, but bibs are pretty popular in the whitetail world, I think, even for bow hunters, even for mobile hunters. So a kind of a midweight bib that has some venting where you could zip up, open, like Levi's big on doing that, opening up the legs for going in and letting that heat vent out. But then, you know, just something high that blocks off that waist area and lower back area, you know.
Yeah, and one thing I'll add to the bibs, I prefer like a, and this is just my personal opinion, I prefer like a, if you can make it with like a, how the above your waist fits a little bit more snug to your body, that it's not like a boxy.
So it's thing. Not like overalls. It's yeah. actually got a kind of, yeah, it forms it's, around your midsection.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. That's a couple of things. I've been asking for the, you know, so the ptarmigan, which we talk about all the time as the best product for whitetail hunters, a ptarmigan vest, which is, you know, a down mm-hmm. vest, and a bill beanie.
Yep.
I've been asking for those things forever. So those are two things. I don't know. What else?
I was just telling him that, you know, well, like you said, I told him that in the whitetail world, the bibs are, I mean, every hunting camp you go in the South this time of year, they're wearing, most of them are rifle hunting, yeah. but they're wearing bibs to the stand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what people wear.
My big thing going back to like those bibs and even the jacket that would match that if they ever bring it to market is the quietness is a big,
yeah,
more fleece,
big yep. thing to me.
That's almost like a heavier, a little bit warmer, like grid light fleece.
A little heavier.
Would be.
It would need to be heavier. Yeah.
I think. I don't know, and maybe you know this, either of the two of you might know this a little bit more from the business perspective side of things, but with a lot of performance stuff and maybe just kind of the gear that you guys develop out west, we use a lot more fleece. Is it because fleece doesn't work well in your environment in terms of the amount of mobility that y'all have hiking, or what is that?
I don't know exactly that answer. You don't see a lot of it as much out there, and maybe one of the reasons why is the wind, the quietness isn't as big a factor.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And the durability of like the hard scrabble, that soft shell outer.
Yeah, I mean
walking, you know.
That is a big thing is. We want durability, but we can also put anything underneath that too. The down is a big popular thing in the West. The down pants, the down jacket, those type of things too. And so, I think the big thing is the fact that of the quietness. It's not.
I guess you guys see how, you know, you're sitting in a tree stand, especially early morning, late afternoon. You're in a little, you know, in one of these areas like we've been hunting where. You're kind of in a wood block or in a small flat or something, and I mean, you can hear everything you do in the tree stand. You can, it's.
Oh yeah.
You know,
whitetails pick up on that.
Yeah.
And I get it. Yeah, I mean, you experience it, and it's like, okay, I see why these guys are asking for this stuff.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think fleece in general is for sitting still. Like fleece is just warmer than just about anything. I mean, it just like. The Mad Trapper hoodie is kind of a just a basic performance hoodie, but kind of the kind of hoodie we wear hoodies a lot, just like bibs, we wear hoodies a lot, and it's never been a big product. You know, talking to you guys, like in fact, didn't even do the Mad Trapper last year because it's like I know when I first, you know, back first really working with Scree and stuff, and I would talk about it, and in numerous, they're like, people actually hunt in that, like it was almost just like a branded like merchandise kind of thing for you guys, and I'm like, no, like whitetail hunters that I talk to about Scree, they want a hoodie.
That's their outer layer
because it's warm. You sit and like, even though there's not like all of the innovation and design behind, and not that there's not a place for that, because you know, with the merinos and all of the other pieces that have a lot of innovation behind them, but like a good hoodie is warm when you're sitting in a tree stand, you know, and so it's warm when you're walking to a tree stand too, but it's warm sitting there, and that soft outer fleece like that is warm. So
I'll add one more thing that I was thinking about, and y'all have probably discussed this before, but on the Nebo rain suit.
putting pit zips on your,
I know,
yeah,
doing the amount of hiking y'all do. And if you have to hike in a rain suit, you're going to sweat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just kind of because they don't breathe.
Yeah.
So,
well, and once again, part of the reason for that is that those 11 inches of rain we get a year. If it's raining, we're not hiking. We're underneath a tree or something, because in about 20 minutes, it's not going to rain again for six more months. So.
That's a good point.
But Colorado and Wyoming, a lot of Montana, a lot of these areas where it does get a lot of rain and moisture, then, yeah, for sure. We've had that request of doing that. You know, Colin mentioned on the down pants, adding some front pocket to that so you put your stuff into those type of things too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's accessibility.
Can't have too many pockets. I mean, let's
that's
just
another
honest.
Thing for tree stand hunters. I mean, you talk about all kinds of gear. Like, the more places you have to hang and stash stuff when you're sitting in a tree stand, the better. I mean, because, you know.
I mean, you see how I use my pockets going up and coming down in the morning with the tree stand cam strap and the little rope and all that stuff.
Yeah, dude, Colin has a little gadget for everything.
Dude, like, this guy's the gear junkie of all gear junkies.
Like, right, if I needed a can opener, he probably would have had one. I'm like, hey, Colin, do you have some fireworks? And he probably has some fireworks in his pocket. I mean, the dude has everything. Like, he really does. Incredible.
Yeah, he's definitely a gear junkie. So, it's obviously, you'll be getting this podcast a little later, because we stay off schedule some during hunting season. We were hunting on our normal release date, and it's the week of Christmas, and you know, it's kind of that time. It's really, in my opinion anyway, the best time in the South for deer camp, and obviously the rut's going on in a lot of places. I know I'm here hunting this hunt these 4 days, but I'm watching my cameras back home, and there's a lot of activity. I think that we're probably, I don't know, what do you think, Levi? We're probably 4 or 5 days away from potentially having a lot of rut activity in a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean, in years past, this week, or maybe I would call this weekend and last weekend, date-wise, is traditionally probably my favorite time to hunt throughout the year. That's where I kind of typically see, and there's varying opinions all over the state, but that's typically when I see those older class deer, you really start seeing them getting up and not necessarily chasing does, but you just out cruising, just can be anywhere at any time. So that's in my opinion, I think that's where we're at right now. Not to say that some does aren't coming in and getting bred right now. I mean, that buck that Colin and Josh, and I actually saw the buck an hour after they did. He went across a dried up old pond, and I was hunting on the other side of it, and he was courting a doe, running a spike off away from the doe. So,
yeah, I mean, the weather's good, and it's, you need to be in a tree. I mean,
yeah.
Yep.
It's just that simple.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the best time of the year. So I guess just before we wrap up, you guys, any kind of final closing thoughts from you guys just about your overall experience, Louisiana and whitetail hunting, and anything you haven't, I guess, anything you've been thinking but you haven't had a chance to say on this podcast, just it's kind of curious to me, just for guys to experience something new for the first time. What, Levi?
Nothing.
No, go ahead.
I was going to bring up the fact that Locke does not like white chocolate Reese's trees.
I don't
you've
dislike
been,
them. I've eaten
bad mouthing them.
I bad mouth people that act like they're the best candy. And they're not. They're good. They're okay. But they're not the best.
You ate half the sack when I got back from the grocery
store. This is the only thing on the counter. It was like, I mean, but if there had been a bag of Snickers next to it, I thought I would have eaten.
I mean, there's cosmic brownies in the pantry.
I've eaten 3 or 4 of those since we've been here too.
Okay.
We do question Locke's choices of snacks. He's been way off on a lot of that stuff.
Well. Yeah. Anyway, the question was.
I'll leave with my, unless you want to go first.
It don't matter. I was just going to say, you know, it's been a fun experience and definitely something that I want to get back down here and do again. It's just a different style of hunting that gives us different opportunities, and it's just been a lot of fun. And I just want to thank you guys for having us down here and giving us the chance to do this and helping us out. Obviously, you guys have been hanging our stands for us and all sorts of stuff. So appreciate Levi for having us out here on his property. And
for sure. The only other thing I'd say with especially maybe in Louisiana for those out west is some of the terminology that you guys use.
Okay. Give me examples.
Okay. I'll give you two examples. The first day up in the stand, we were talking about the bucks and Colin's like, yeah, that buck's locked in. I'm like, locked in? What are you talking about? What's locked in?
Locked
mean?
Up.
Or locked up. Locked up.
With a dead.
Explain what locked up is.
Well, that's Locke had texted us that morning saying that he thought there was a doe or a buck in between us locked up with a doe, which just means like
the doe is in heat.
Not really moving much. She's kind of just tending her.
So like the doe is in heat and they're together until they breed.
Yeah, and that was Colin explaining to me like something about laying.
Oh yeah, I said if he's locked up, that's not that good because he might not move around that much.
Yeah, they're just.
You want him cruising.
He is not leaving her until
they're like that. So if you watch The Bachelor, and I don't, but they're in the fantasy suite.
Okay.
Sorry, The Bachelor. I don't, but my wife does, so it's on in the house from time to time. So,
he likes it. I'm sure Locke watches The Bachelor and eating his white Reese's Pieces.
Reese's.
And see, the way things are pronounced, too, is...
So you had another terminology. Yeah. There were two. You did lockdown.
Well, the other one was, I think it was Levi who said it. He's like... He said something to the fact of, yeah, a lot of the, I think it was the second morning we hiked in, and it was dark, and he points over there, and he's like, a lot, and I wish I could do Levi's accent, because it's awesome. But he was saying, a lot of these deers, I like to eat those acorns. And I'm like, what the hell's an acorn? And then I realized later that morning, he was talking about acorns.
Acorn.
Yeah, I pronounce it acorn.
An acorn. Yeah, an acorn tree.
Here's how I feel about pronouncing
acorn. I don't think that's nothing with his accent. That's just what we say down
acorn.
Here. It's an acorn tree.
So here's.
I didn't know what an acorn was.
I've been waiting most of my life to have to go off into this diatribe, okay? So the way I feel about people that pronounce acorn, is that's a whole lot of wasted energy trying to pronounce a word.
It's just not efficient.
It's not efficient at all. And I have a big problem with inefficient things, like anything in life. I'm big about efficiency. So when you can just say acorn, but you have to like say acorn, I mean, that takes effort. Right?
It makes sense.
Have you ever eaten one?
I have not.
We need to do that before you leave. I'm just joking. No, actually, I did have a neighbor that ate them. Seriously, growing up, this guy thought he was like an Indian, and he was like all into nature, and he would boil and eat acorns. Acorns.
Acorns.
Acorns.
There's other terminology, but it's just a little bit of me knowing that. So, but I do want to say, and this is credit probably to, I mean, if the whole state of Louisiana is like these three gentlemen. The people here are awesome. It's that, I don't know if it's the Southern hospitality or what it is, but it's just, it's easy going, it's easy living, it's happy in a world that's just, there's a lot of stupid people, a lot of just
there's stupid corruption. People in Louisiana. We're just keeping you away from them because we want you to have a good impression.
All I know is if a lot more people were like you guys, this world would really be a lot better place. So,
well, thank you, Josh. That's
pretty cool.
Yep.
That's a pretty nice thing to say. I guess we can just end on that.
And one more thing. So Levi, me and Locke have been guiding this week, but yeah. Levi is guiding the guide. So
yeah,
thank you.
And you're told to never guide the guide, but Levi, that doesn't. If you've heard that before, that doesn't really apply.
Well, that would apply to us.
Yeah. Well, it's been fun, and like, you know, it's nice things to say, but you know, we greatly appreciate you guys have supported the podcast and Louisiana Bowhunter for several years, and that's a, you know, we can't say thank you enough for that. So the least we could do is bring you guys hunting, give you gas station chicken, feed you boudin. My wife is making them a pan of Jiffy cornbread this evening before they go back to the airport in the morning, because no grown man should not know what Jiffy cornbread is. That's just absurd.
I'm fixing to tear that up. Did I just sound southern there? Did I sound like I was from Louisiana?
You kind of sounded like a predator. Kind of like, it's a little bit aggressive. I don't know how to take that, Nate. Yeah, but yes, you did. Yeah, you're fixing to tear that up. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Josh said when we were leaving the airport, honestly, we hadn't really gotten very far into this whole adventure at all. And Josh said, by the time I leave here, I'm going to be talking like y'all. And that hasn't happened. And I've been a little disappointed. I've been hoping to get
many y'alls.
I wanted to hear a y'all or a yonder or a
acre. Like I have been talking like y'all.
There you go. Yeah, you're getting there. You need a few more days. You should have went duck hunting with Hank. We'd have got it.
Oh, Hank does, yeah.
You should have went duck hunting with Hank this morning. You would have gotten a few words, you know, with the southern slang to it. So, but it's been a fun trip. I'm glad you guys could come. And Josh has got one more hunt this afternoon, and we're hoping for one of those last hunt magics and have a deer that he's told me that he's not going to shoot a doe. And I kind of just subtly said, you know, I got a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, and we eat a lot of deer meat, and you can't take it back to Utah. So if you want to shoot a doe, you know, and he kind of
said he didn't have any interest.
He had no interest in shooting a doe. So I don't know if we'll get a doe, but maybe a buck. Maybe. It's been good weather. It's really good weather. So it's really like, this is the kind of, you know, any hunt you go on could be the hunt, you know. So hoping Josh has a little last hunt magic this afternoon, but glad you guys could come, and thank you for taking time to record a podcast with us and all that, and thank you for supporting Louisiana Bowhunter.
Yeah, it's been pleasure. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
So it's a week of Christmas. We're going to try to get you guys another podcast out at the end of the week, back on our Friday schedule. But in the meantime, as you're listening to this, we have three new products that we've been talking about forever, and we're finally getting around to getting those out, and I'm hoping that maybe we can get some stocking stuffers in for the end of the week. If you're looking for that, we got three new hat designs. One of them is a scree pattern hat, and we got a slew camo and a new dark loading leather patch hat. We got three or four rope style hats that should be coming out for New Year's. So make sure you check that out on the website, Louisiana Bowhunter, and we'll be getting some of these new hat designs into our retailers very soon. And just we'll be doing a drawing for our December gear giveaway at New Year's. So every order online gets into that. We've been doing that all year long, so just remind you about that. And at some point or another, Levi's going to get y'all a lot more information about the film contest that we're doing. That was just a subtle shot across the living room at Levi. But, no, we're still doing the film contest. We're going to be offering submissions for that in February sometime. So I hope you guys are filming your hunts and getting ready to put something together and send to us. We're going to have a scree bundle, a Buzzard Roost saddle, and some other big prizes for that. So Keep following along for that, and we appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@louisianabowhunter.com, and if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know, and we'll reach out to them, or pick up your gear at louisianabowhunter.com, and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.